Honorable Chair. My name is Ulivile Sepako. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
My name is Omi Singh, member of this committee, representing KwaZulu-Natal.
I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Jacques Julius, Gauteng.
Good morning, Kathy Libeskovne, Western Cape. Good morning, Garzan Koni, Northern Cape.
I'm Siyabonga Tswele, KwaZulu-Natal. Jefferson, I came to Parliament in 1994 as a senator from KwaZulu, representing KwaZulu-Natal. I became a member of the NCOP, first NCOP, representing KwaZulu-Natal, but now I'm representing National. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and a very good morning to all the Honorable Members. My name is Nonkubela Jordan. I'm the Acting DDG International. Chairperson, the Deputy Minister has passed her apologies. She did indicate that she's got another commitment with the Speaker. We also have an apology chair from our Director General. He would have liked to have been here, but we are actually busy with our two-day strategic planning session, so he will make time at a later stage to come and see you. Chairperson, may I? Okay, I'm here with my colleague. This is Mr. Sululami Doi. He's currently the director responsible for frequency spectrum management at the department. But from the 1st of January, he will be placed in our Geneva office as the ITU representative for the country.
Yes, good morning, Minister, Chairperson, and the members. My name is Siya Koza from the DGPS.
My apologies, Chair, for arriving late. My name is Zubiswa Ngata. I'm the member of the NCOP, residing in Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Minister, the members of the committee. I am Pumelele Sibisi. I'm the committee secretary. Thank you.
Good morning to everyone. My name is Eric Boskat. I'm the Colonel Advisor for the SILA Committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tolani Smelane, Researcher for the Committee.
Good morning. I'm the Executive Secretary to the Chairperson.
Amanda Zindani, the Committee Assistant.
Good morning. I'm Edwin Bessa from the Department of Public Enterprises. I'm here in connection with the presentation from SA Express.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Fumisa Ngale. I'm a monitor for the Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Sabran Struvi from the Office of the Auditor General, Senior Manager.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Chamwena Samari. I'm Senior Manager from the Office of the Auditor General. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Ms. Lambu. done it already.
Oh, you're done?
Yeah, sure, thanks.
Yeah, thank you very much. I received apology of the deputy minister was already apology from Honorable Nyambi. And can we proceed with our presentation?
Sure. Honorable Smith will be lightly stuck in traffic.
What's going on with the traffic this morning? I was also stuck in traffic.
Metro Rail is not running as it's supposed to be.
Thank you very much. With any further delays, I'm going to allow the Department of Telecommunications International Relations. You are going to present, I don't know. Minister, I'm going to give over to you. We are going to dealing with the rectification of the International Telecommunications Regulations. Thank you. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. As you know, there are two presentations we are really trying to put today, but the officials will take you on the details of this. let's apologize for the delay in this presentation of the 2012 one upfront. But there's been work which has been done by both the department and the regulator to try and working with the international affairs and the legal division to make sure that what we'll be ratifying is in line with our constitution. these are old regulations, but they are very important. The officials will deal with some of the details. What I like most is that some of the advantage of this regulation, they were starting to take issues of disability into the telecoms, which were not there before. So the issues really, maybe the preface might, the issues of internet, they are always very difficult issues at the global level. They always get pushed, and aside, and maybe just to put a preface that currently the internet is governed through what is called ICANN, which is a U.S. agency, because as you remember, it was started by a U.S. government, and then they allowed the private sector and other governments to use this. So there's been that battle at a global level of saying that internet be a global, truly global resource, where all of us can have equal access for it. So that if one president in one country gets angry one time, we're not close of the internet, because it's an important enabling tool and for growth and for economy. Internet economy is one of the fastest growing economies, new economies at this stage. that's what really informs us when we're trying to go to this international level. I'll leave the officials to deal with, and that's why we normally have to get a cabinet mandate. The the other thing is there's this thing called satellite, because most of our areas are rural, but launching of satellites themselves is another contested thing, orbital slots. Because much as we are located these slots as the different regions, the African region, we are part of region one. Region one, it includes Africa and Europe. So if you check who has launched satellites, it's Europe. And they continuously encroach and take over those lots which are unused, because we didn't have capacity. That's why then the Department of Science and Technology, we're working with them they are the lead department, really try and say Africa must have entry, a significant entry, because we have got the skills of South Africa in that environment. So the other aspect, like I said, this is a huge economy. Whether you're talking with this memo or the next one, it's exactly the same thing, which are underlying. But when you're going to these conferences, people are pushing their national interest. Their national interests, even those who are friends to us, they also push their national interests. And it's always about what devices, whether it's regulation. If I'm manufacturing certain devices, I push that regulation favors my products. So that's why when we talk about South Africa, I must really seriously start thinking about manufacturing, even if we start with localization, so that we can also have products to sell. People are now talking about 5G technologies, but it's all about products which is going to be sold in that environment. So I thought I should just keep these so that you know that when we send officials, why they go and spend so many days there, why we send such a huge delegation. Because it's a battle. If you are not present in each and every committee meeting, you lose it. And you become a permanent follower and and the taker of technology. I thought I should just give that background as a that the standards then became quite critical, that we have to start have some agreement on the standards and regulate these things in that context. The other challenge is these roaming things. The roaming costs are relatively high. But some of these regulations which were agreed upon, they started saying, let's have some transparency in your roaming arrangements. We are still not even there much as South Africa, much as our regulator has put these things, that if you travel to Lesotho, your operator must tell you how much they're going to charge you. But sometimes they just forget. And you get these surprise bills when you come back home. It becomes difficult for us because we've got so many neighbors. Sometimes as you drive just near them, the roaming, your phone will pick up the signal from the other side without you knowing, if you let your phone remain on roaming, because it's difficult all the time to keep on changing these things. And the other thing is, where is the graveyard for all these devices we have? So we're starting to say, let's think about the graveyard, because it's going to be very easy for the developed countries to quickly dump this thing to all of us, to have some form of regulations and move towards the best e-waste practices globally, so that we don't have a challenge of being dumped. But I thought I should just give these broad things and then ask the officials to make the presentation on the first one. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister, for the program.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the Honorable Minister. Honorable Members, the first presentation, as indicated by the Minister, is for us to be requesting Parliament to ratify what we call the Final Act from the World Conference on International Telecommunications, which we call WICCET. This conference took place in Dubai. Next slide. This conference took place in Dubai in 2012. And we are ratifying this in line with Section 231 of our Constitution. The Minister has indicated that why we brought this late is that we've had to do extensive discussions, and we also needed to next slide, please. We also needed to make sure that there is alignment. Cabinet recently approved our white paper on the National Integrated ICT white paper. We also see this ITR as being very important and strategic aligned to our MDP in terms of supporting an efficient information infrastructure that promotes your economic growth. And it will also impact on the broadband as well as the GDP of the country. Next slide. With regard to just to give a bit of a background, honorable members, the last time that the ITRs were reviewed was in 1988. And you know that, especially within our sector, there's a rapid development that take place on an annual level. Back then, I think the provisions that were in the old ITRs were talking to just the principles of interconnection amongst your operators. And Africa at that juncture was still unconnected. We didn't have submarine cables. We didn't have cross-border interconnectivity. Globally, you had primary big players like your AT&T in the United States, and then British Telecoms for connecting the rest of Europe. And then they sought to look at issues with regard to privatization, but not much else. So that particular area of privatization, competition, deregulation then followed. And then obviously looking at the subsequent growth. Today's world is slightly different. Next slide, slide 5. Where obviously there's been a growth, and we've got, as I said, Africa is now connected to more than 5 submarine cables. We've got cross-border connectivity. Internet also took a huge boom. You find that most of the time now and currently, and especially during the 2012 cycle, that there was a lot in terms of the internet protocol, or in terms of our devices now, we're using smartphones and smart devices, and the technological convergence in terms of blurred. So you have your information and communications, you're getting content online, you also could get your video online and many others. And then obviously mobile phones became the dominant telecommunications device that was drastically taking up this particular market. Slide number 6. So in the context of the ITRs, the process was very much so inclusive, and more it was championed for the first time, especially in international global politics, as the minister indicates. The developing countries really took were at the forefront. There was definitely fears of the powers of the internet, and such your big developing countries led by the United States had a lot of resistance in terms of us discussing the issues of the internet. And we see that the internet is a game changer, and we need to make sure that as many countries as possible, that all the issues are discussed in a multilateral platform than for one particular country to have a dominant control and powers in how then it is being managed. And therefore, honorable members and honorable chair, there were attempts at the Congress, at the conference, to really suppress the issues, and especially related to internet. The moment you mention anything related to internet, you mention the word data, you mention the word cybersecurity, there would be a very hostile situation, which is unlikely because I think most of the time the ITU works in terms of consensus. So there were articles that were published, I think even within our national force, there was a lot of influence by the civil society where it was insinuated that governments were plotting to take over the management of the internet, and the lobbying continued throughout. As I indicated, that the atmosphere was very tense, and then there were also many attempts to mobilize both South Africa as well as the private sector in terms of making sure that we have a little voice as possible in this. Slide number 7. talks to the content with regard to the new ITRs. We championed at the Dubai meeting the quality of service in as far as making sure that there is a universal standard when it comes to issues of regulations as well as even your instruments, so that we make sure that we don't have cheap qualities coming to our countries. And you know, now you have issues where they'll say certain devices need to be taken off the market. There was also an issue that is quite pertinent for us that talks to transparency in as far as international roaming prices were concerned. Honorable members, I just want to pause here that, as the minister alluded, the roaming charges are hitting at the core for customers, for business, as well as for countries if you want to move. We are actually in a position where we're trying to open up South Africa into the market. But we've got to make sure that the businesses that want to come and do business in our shores, that we create an enabling environment of affordable ICT in order for them to be able to connect to the rest of the world. So data is now the big fight out there and the big animal. And we are happy that at least in as far as this ITRs, it talks about wholesale regulation. And therefore it will compound, because currently the roaming partners, they want to keep this information secret. The department has since 2012 been fighting with both the mobile operators, working with the Competitions Commission to try and address this particular issue. So the new regulations, once we've ratified, is going to assist us in terms of making sure that we're able to address the issues of roaming. It also promotes access to your telecommunications services. As you know, there are over 650 million people living with disability. So this also sets standards to make sure that our ICT equipment and devices are inclusive. The energy efficiency as well as e-waste best practice. As you know, I think again, Africa ends up always being the dumping ground of the old technologies. And then now with the discussions that are taking place under the COP 21, we will find ourselves having to pay for other people dumping these old infrastructures in our country. So at least when we do regulate that, we will then be able to make sure that there's a regulations on e-waste for those. The misuse with regard to your number resources, which is often associated with your fraudulent practices. There's also other provisions, Chair, that also will assist the regulator in terms of your caller line identification information, and then obviously the safety of live telecommunication. This now expands to your oceans economy as well to make sure that there are dedicated numbers for that. And then the promotion of the development of regional telecommunications traffic exchanges. Again, here, Chair, we see this as a great opportunity. As I indicated, part of the roaming partners, they were only in Europe. In fact, Britain, UK is one of those dominant players, which also then did not set a level playing ground for your emerging. I can imagine South Sea or, you know, even Neotel trying to negotiate with the big animal, please excuse me, but a dominant player such as British Telecom. The negotiations are not going to be fair. Whereas we may find that we have our own capabilities in terms of market regulations. So these regulations assist us to making sure that you level the playing ground. Emerging players can also come into the fore and negotiate on for themselves. On slide 8, Chair.
Maybe just before, South Africa is leading in this development of the regional centers, because it adds to the cost. Most of the countries where the exchange centers were in their former colonial areas. And if I'm phoning you in the Northern Cape, I have to go via London. It just adds to the cost. It's the same thing also, if I'm phoning Namibia, I have to go via London or Germany. It just adds to the cost. But we are developing, I think the first one is Johannesburg Exchange Point. We have got exchange points here in Cape Town, we have got exchange points in Durban. Of course, they are run by the private sector. But we have been working with the private sector that now we have actually won, we're the first one to be one of the regional exchange points for SADC. And that on its own, we launched that regional exchange center in September this year by the AU Commissioner for Infrastructure. And what you said there, just for Namibia alone, just connecting through the South African exchange point, it cuts their cost by 30%. I'm just trying to put that, it's not insignificant. these are real things which affect the real cost. But in addition, our national exchange points and our regional exchange point is assisting other countries to establish their own national exchange points or other regional exchange points. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. On slide 8, honorable members and honorable chair, as I was alluding some of these issues, so the ITRs assist us in terms of encouraging investments, especially for those emerging countries as well. And it also assists us to make sure that there's regulations in as far as competitive wholesale pricing by the operators. But also it does not negate that governments can also have access to that particular information so that we will also then be able to set regulatory standards in our shores. There's an application in terms of the basic pricing principles and frameworks agreements that need to be there. It must be based on principles of transparency, practicality, as well as causality. And also the economic benefits. We must make sure that, the players would then have dispute resolutions on equal ground. And the most important thing is to avoid double taxation. You know, they want to charge you for both incoming and outgoing traffic. So these are then the issues that the ITR set to regulate in terms of your international services. And then there's also regulatory frameworks on the maritime telecommunications as well as mobile. As you have known, in the last couple of years we've seen uprisings with regard to the oceans and as well as what's happening in our shores, where they're hijacking the ships as well. The other issue, the most controversial issues, I must indicate, and it also follows on the next slide, is on cybersecurity and spam. There was, in slide number 9, that there was huge debates on that particular issue. In fact, it was also just agreed upon at the last on the last day. There was serious concern.
Agreement by exhaustion.
The agreement by exhaustion, Minister. Agreement by exhaustion in your international fora is where they take your meetings from 9 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock the following day. So they would make sure that, obviously, especially for African countries or developing countries, you know, we cannot afford to take a delegation of more than 5 or 6 people. So those 5 or 6 people, you cannot also at the same time, because during the day there would have been separate committees. So you really need to ensure that you have people, and I'm glad this is one of those who have specialized over the years, to know how to stay up. And when you come back at 6 o'clock, please do not think that that is the end, because you simply go to refresh, because you need to make sure that the resolutions that you have crafted will follow through. So it's been a game that it's been played in these international forums, and they defer these items. So it's not just agreement by exhaustion in terms of day one. You've already been in a conference over a 10-day or even 2 or 3 weeks, and therefore when they pull you out in that last stretch, you're already exhausted from the continuous discussions over the 10-day period. And so that is, and unfortunately, they start with what was the number agreed at the beginning. So at 9 o'clock, everybody was in the room. As to whether or not at 6 o'clock in the morning, everybody's still in the room, it's irrelevant. A decision has been made.
Can be alone.
So a lot of coffee and...
Once a quorum, always a quorum.
Yeah.
Take a decision.
So for us also, I also want to indicate that we've had to, because sometimes there's a lot of lobbying and influencing. So we sign a code of conduct for the delegation that does go to these international fora. We have a cabinet mandate. You are not allowed to differ from that cabinet mandate. You are not allowed to even engage. You have to seek permission from the head of delegation for you to be invited even to a dinner or drinks or whatever, because some of these things. And others would also showcase you by enticing you to take you shopping, or they bring a gift to the table. So all of those is that you will need pre-approval for you to, before you can embark in any of the, those activities. And as I indicated, honorable members, there was a lack of consensus, and this is where we're going to come in as to why the low turn, low out in terms of those countries that have signed. The main issues of contention was on security and the robustness of the international telecommunications network, as well as the spam, what we call unsolicited bulk electronic communications. And here, sometimes, you know, these spam, the United States is has got a, they could also define, if as member countries you have a particular position, and over time obviously you work, because the only platform that you can work on is on email. And therefore, by definition of saying this unsolicited bulk electronic, so if a continuous mail that is going online has got the same subject matter, and they want to take it down. So this is where then they've put in this indirect provision. So then now they want to define it as unsolicited. So we spend a lot of time debating as to what you call or what you define as unsolicited bulk electronics. And therefore, at the end, after much of this culture in terms of agreement by consensus and many others, we had to take these matters into vote, and only 89 countries signed the agreement, as I indicated, vis-a-vis the 152 that participated. Honorable members, sometimes these 89 is not a true reflection of necessarily that there is a low interest or appetite in terms of these ICRs. Other member states are actually influenced. You still have, as the minister alluded, the issues of colonial control. And therefore, why South Africa wants to ratify this is that we know that we are a leader within the continent. If we ratify this, there will be other member countries as well who would want to follow pursuit. We are also discussing this particular issue to make sure to mobilize for more member states to ratify or to accede at the ITU. This discussion, and we're also trying to make sure that we have a regular review, unlike a situation where from 1988 up until 2012. Currently, our proposal is that every 8 years we need to review the regulations in the ICT, because ICTs are growing. I mean, right now we're talking about the Internet of Things and the OTTs, and these are issues that we cannot leave unregulated, otherwise we do not know how this particular sector is also even going to define other sectors, because when you look at the issues of the internet, it's cross Internet of Things, it crosses to your agricultural sector, it crosses to your electricity in terms of your meter readings and everything else, your smart cities. So we need to make sure that there's a regular regulations of these at an international level so that the standards and compliances are there. So we are humbly requesting consideration of the ratification for the ITRs. And we have engaged with our regulator as well as within government, as well as with the industry. And there has been a buy-in in terms of making sure that South Africa accedes to this. It will definitely assist us in terms of when we are now in the process of the bills for the white paper, that we're able to regulate this sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. There's another one. Honorable members, will you pass questions on this?
Honorable
Patrick, over to you.
I suggest that we take both of them simultaneously and then we engage
Father Nonkubela Jordan, be simple, define, explain your concepts, because you are specialists in this, we are not. We don't operate on that space or in that space.
Thank you, honorable members. Ma'am, you can proceed with the next presentation. Just bear in mind, because we are having the next presentation of the SIA Express also, so I think we must try to finish for 11.
Very briefly on this one, it's a basic thing, but this one is about allocation of spectrum, which is the oxygen for most of the communication. Just to say that we use spectrum for various purposes, from security, from observations, for communications, for flights, and now for even for your cars, because devices are communicating. I like this one about cars, because it will help those who sometimes get disturbed by what we drink, that we don't go around knocking people around, because cars are connected, they can stop if you want to knock me out. So, I'm just trying to prove that it may look very minor in future, but that's where in future we're going with car manufacturing. Minister of Transport is on board with it. But the key tension there is the spectrum between the mobiles and the broadcasters and others. The mobiles, because of the rapid growth, they are the governors of spectrum. So they tend to encroach and take, give us that spectrum. So, but because the if you check the growth of mobile, particularly in Africa, the bulk of communication is through mobile. As we go to the fourth industrial revolution, this hyper-connected Internet of Things, it will also be mobile. So there will be a legitimate reason why mobiles will continue to. But at the same time, as a country, we must have some balance. Because this tension between mobiles and particularly broadcasters now, but we're also encouraging the broadcasters to migrate, because if they go digital, they don't need a lot of spectrum, which is already wasted there. They can have more channels, they may need just a little bit more spectrum. We also had a very huge delegation here, consisting of many departments and state entities, which we're going to protect. We had a very clear mandate that will give spectrum, new spectrum for mobile, but we'll also protect some spectrum, which was being heavily encroached for digital spectrum for television. Why? Because television is still very important in a country like us. It's still a major form of communication to reach majority of the people, just broadcasting, whether it's radio or television. So they'll talk to that. But I think as a region, we receive quite a lot of spectrum, even on the mobile spectrum, digital spectrum, what they call IMT. I think we receive about 474 megahertz of spectrum just for the mobile, for region one, because different regions, sometimes they allocate differently. What was also critical after was this airline, Air Malaysia, that we should have a spectrum for tracking global flight tracking, but we don't have this disaster where flights just disappear once they lose these ground sensors, which are terrestrial on the main. So that spectrum was agreed upon so that we can improve safety of the aircraft. I think it's important for countries like South Africa. If you fly from South Africa international, if you go to Australia, you cross a long tract of sea. If you go to to Hong Kong, if you go to US, Brazil, so we have got a, but everyone agreed on that spectrum. The one we just want to clarify up front is drones, what the unmanned aircraft spectrum. We agreed on it. Not like the countries who want to bomb people through drones. That's not the intention we're looking for here. But as a country, we're doing a lot of peacekeeping in very difficult terrains. It helps to protect our own soldiers if you can have some of those drones there, monitoring around them. If you take, for instance, Eastern DRC, it's a very difficult terrain. But our troops are there. They are all over Africa. It's one element of it, but there are other reasons for why we thought we should agree on this. But even for your own policing, I mean, now we were speaking about what is maritime, but we're not going to be able to send aircraft with people every time. You can send unmanned aircraft to go and see who's trying to push your fishing there. Before you send the, what is this, corvettes to go and chase them. So it becomes quite critical that we do have that type of spectrum, but I just want to clarify this unmanned spectrum. But the details are there, and I'm sure they'll also be very brief. That we're quite happy that most of the things we wanted we gained as a country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you, Minister, for the overview and background. Honorable members, I would perhaps maybe want to start with just to step back a little bit, I'll be quick, just to give an overview of what ITU is all about. ITU is an agent of the United Nations. It deals with allocation of radio spectrum and satellite orbits. And it also deals with the development of technical standards to ensure that networks and technologies connect seamlessly. And it also assists with the improvement of access to ICTs in marginalized and unserved communities. What I'll be dealing with on my side is actually radio regulations, because the ITU has got three sectors, the radio communication sector, the standardization sector, which deals with the ITR that we've just concluded. The one that I'm dealing with deals with radio communications. Under the radio communications, we have a treaty called the radio regulations. These radio regulations are actually revised and reviewed every 4 years to keep pace with the development in technology. And fortunately, the positions that were taken to the previous conference, the World Radio Conference, WRC15, which is a mechanism to actually revise and review these radio regulations. All the positions were actually approved by cabinet, so we were quite comfortable with the output and the recommendation that we are putting forward for the ratification of the final act. So I'll skip this slide, but I must just state that the WRC is it's one of the most technical conferences of the ITU. I think I've already covered this one. And then I can actually just on this one, at the WRC 15, what we have done, it was actually to do a number of amendments to these radio regulations, which is the treaty, which was actually adopted and signed at the last day of the conference. And the radio regulations are already published, but the changes that are actually contained, that were actually undertaken by WRC 15, will come into force on the 1st of January. and we have followed the process of domesticating the treaty by actually aligning our national radio frequency plan, which is developed by ICASA and approved by Minister, to actually align the treaty with our national radio frequency plan. The strategic focus for us is actually, as the department, is to respond to South Africa's domestic radio spectrum requirements. And in exercise of our sovereign right, South Africa reserves the right to structure its own national radio frequency plan to suit our own national requirements. We've got requirements from the Department of Defense, Science and Technology, your mega projects like the square kilometer array, which needs frequencies that must actually be protected, and also the broadcasting and the mobile sector, which has the requirements as well. So those requirements and must actually be safeguarded. And also of importance is the harmonization within the region, which then would actually benefit South Africa from economies of scale, to ensure that the technologies that are developed elsewhere would be able to actually come to South Africa as well. And that will also ensure the issue of interoperability, so that when we travel to other countries, our phones will still be able to work and other devices. The process of ratification of the final act I will not cover. I think it's fairly straightforward. I would cover some of the key outcomes, not all of them. The one that was indicated by Minister, mobile broadband communications. You note there we highlighted Africa. Africa and Europe are actually in the same region, which is Region 1. In terms of coordination for radio communication purposes, we've got three regions for purposes of ensuring that we don't have harmful interference between different countries. So Africa and Europe are in Region 1, including countries that used to fall within the Soviet Union. But if you look at what we've actually achieved at the conference, it's actually 55% more spectrum for mobile communications. This becomes very important, and it becomes important also for the next conference that will actually happen in 2019, as we require more and more spectrum for mobile, because there's a new paradigm where now we are moving away from people communicating to people. We've got machines communicating to machines. So that would be your 5G technologies. The other one that I would cover is actually broadcasting service. So we've ensured that we've actually safeguarded the spectrum that must be preserved for terrestrial broadcasting, because we don't have another platform for free-to-air television. We cannot offer free-to-air television via satellite or cable, like countries like the US and some countries elsewhere. Also, the one that Minister actually covered was actually the drones, which becomes very much important. I think the difficulty with this one was actually the coordination that needs to actually happen between the drone systems and also satellite systems. But this, in the long run, it would actually ensure that I think your operations at a national level become very much cost efficient in terms of what Minister has already said. Instead of sending a corvette, you actually first send a drone to actually do a proper investigation. And the
they sell them now in the shops, yeah, but small ones. You control, yeah. But they've got the spectrum for short distances. They've got, but they've given them this spectrum. Is it
420?
Yeah. So he'll go for you. You don't need to be there, but he can take pictures for you. he can speak to them. Say, get out of the water. Leave my fish.
Yes, and they have already started with a practical example in Rwanda where they are delivering medicines using drones that are slightly bigger. And we've secured spectrum for the maritime communications to actually ensure that we improved automatic identification systems that are used by the maritime sector. And we've got a spectrum that we've secured for road safety. Although we must admit that not immediately all cars would actually be fitted with these high resolution radars. They would be expensive to start with, but I think in the long term, they will actually help us with new vehicles that are coming to the market with the prevention of collisions. And also, because we've got a national space agency that reports to the Department of Science and Technology, we've secured spectrum for Earth observation purposes. And the last one that I would then cover is actually the satellite and coordination and notification procedures. Because the difficulty that we are in as developing countries, we are not launching satellites at this point in time. And with each and every member state, the ITU has about 193 member states. Each member state has got a dedicated orbital slot. But now you need to actually safeguard as to while other people are actually launching next to your orbital slot, that your slot does not get deteriorated because of the radio interference that comes from the other satellites. Because by the time the next generation, when we are all not here, they want to launch on that particular slot, the slot is no longer usable. Then they will have to go back to the ITU to request a new slot. So it's a very contentious issue. It's actually similar to the internet. It's protected especially by the Western countries because they are the most biggest players in this area. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair, if I can just add, with regard to satellites, as a country, because we still have a lot of the underserved and rural areas, it's still a very important sector for us. Your health clinics, your schools, your police need to be covered in those remote areas because of the terrestrial via satellite. And this particular resolution further added to say that because even as Mr. Doyle indicated, that you may find, which is the current situation, that a country wants to launch where it would have been directly more beneficial for South Africa's orbital slot. And previously, they would just write to the ITU. Within 3 months, if a country has not responded, it is an automatic consensus. And for us, unfortunately, you may find that either they've got old contact and addresses, or the person has left, or the communication is still going via the diplomatic channels, or unfortunately maybe an official is not as efficient and has not looked at that. And then there would have been a decision that has been taken on behalf of the particular country. This particular resolution now says that you actually need to make sure that there's a formal correspondent that will support it. If there isn't, then it means that country is not approving. So this will assist us as well to make sure that we continue to protect. It's just but one of those initiatives, but we are still working on other initiatives to make sure that we protect and we bring back the resources, the scarce resources for Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Very interesting. Thank you for the presentation. And I think on my side, I'd love to have more discussions and to understand. But I normally taking it back to my IT son and to ask, and he will simplify to me. You know, what is it meaning? Then he explained to me so that I can understand. I'm going to allow the honorable member. Questions on the Malambo, on the Pakis, on the Safar, on the Julius, on the
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome these two presentations, which are so, so interesting. It's just that we are in the dark. I fully agree with you, Honorable Chair, that we really need to engage a lot around these spectrums, these new technologies, broadband, you know. But I'm glad to see that our country is going somewhere. We are becoming a part of this global playing field in terms of these new technologies. But the problem that I'm having, I heard the Honorable Minister talking about the satellite, you know, and the engagement that your department is having with the Department of Science and Technology. As a country, I know that we don't have our own satellite, which makes it difficult to be part of these dominant forces. I wonder if are there any discussions taking place in terms of us as a country developing our own satellite so that we compete effectively in this new technologies, because we really need to be independent, not to rely, you know. When you rely on these other countries like the first world, you know, it makes me feel like crying when I'll be in those Francois countries and you make a call, start by going to Paris, and it comes back to South Africa, or when we are in Angola, it has to start in Portugal, and, you know, and you can't say we are out of colonialism in that way. We are still being colonized, you know. And those are the realities that we need to face and not shy away from continuously saying, let us fight decolonization in all its form. I mean colonialism in all its form. So I wonder if how far the discussions around setting up our own satellite. Thank you very much.
Masibulele presentation, siyamukela ngothando. I have a few questions that I want to pose, also considering the time space, the time, rituals and space. Look, Honorable Minister, we, as a member of this committee, will be engaging on this presentation. I will have a deeper interest to carry knowledge, understand the substance of our ICT policy. I know you're talking about this Nonkobelo Betetangi white paper. Yeah. I think we need to check, I want to propose that we need to have time and space to talk about our national ICT policy. That's the first point. But then the second point, on page 5 of the second, of the same, this one, yeah, where you talk of, on page 5, the last bullet, harmonization within the region and the benefit from economies of scale in devices, blah, blah, blah. Whatever that we are doing, can you share with us how does that translate on job creation, fighting poverty, fighting inequality. But then I want to link that question to the question that says, in whatever you are doing, your workings and your operations, how do you pervade this to our people to understand the impact of your work on their daily life? And then your work that you are doing, how does that link, Honorable Minister and your DDG, the linkage with Infraco. Because somewhere you're talking about wireless systems. I want to understand and have that dialectical link in my mind. The cyber security. We are aware that some of state officials, they don't give a damn about cyber security.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say it's because of ignorance. But then how far do we take it to educate and train state officials, even those at a lower level, to understand the impact, the significance of cybersecurity in our system and the colossal crisis that it can cause if we are reckless and not vigilant enough. I think those are the points that I wanted to raise. Others, I will refer them to the next session that we'll have. Ngozi.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I must also welcome this very, very interesting and educating presentation. This is a huge. I was not aware that this department is so important. let me just check something. Who is the negotiator when you are participating in the COP21? Okay. And then the second one is your inter-collaborations with other departments. The security department, security cluster, the environmental affairs, where we are having serious challenge of the rhino poaching, because really this is the department, a lead department that can rescue this country, so important. Maybe check to what extent do you have all your post in your budgetary, any constraints that you might be having because of this huge responsibility. But lastly, check, if you walk between Hartebeest and Krugersdorp in the area called the Hekpoort, you see these huge satellite dishes. Okay. Who owns this? Is this a South African or some foreign assets? And for whom are they capturing information?
And it's just a quick one, just a concern in terms of ITR. You mentioned earlier that you are lobbying other states in terms of the ratification of this. My problem is that you know that you need, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution, you need parliamentary approval. Don't you think you're jumping the gun by lobbying other states and you didn't get approval from your own? I'll just stop with that, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. You know, Honourable Minister.
Thanks, Chair. You know, I was going to ask a question, Chair, first before I from them, which I didn't see from the report, Honourable Minister. As much as we really appreciate the good work that the department is doing, but as the select committee, we also have a responsibility to assist the department. So I didn't see anywhere in your presentation where you say these are our challenges that would need help from the committee, in line with what my colleague before me just said, that you have lobbying that you are doing, and obviously, you would need the assistance of the committee. And again, Chair, let me congratulate the department on the issue of people living with disability and the fact that they have noted that they are also considering expanding their telecommunication to rural areas and most disadvantaged areas. I'm saying this because we're in Alfred Nzo as an NCOP, and we had a high school that has computers that are donated to them, but the problem, they are not connected anywhere. So the sooner that really happens, the better, because I've noted your presentation that you are having exchange centers in three areas, your Joburg, your Cape Town, and Durban. And the interest, when are you further doing that in other provinces, like mine in Eastern Cape? I want to repeat the last, the one of our own satellites, who Honorable Mlambo said it so eloquently, but that was also one point that I wanted to raise.
Thank you very much. Maybe on the roaming, these charges in the roaming, if you are traveling along the border of Botswana and Ramotsere, receiving a call will be charged in the roaming. Mm-hmm. And while you are in South Africa, in the port, I remember when I was doing the serious mifiking is my constituency office. Mm-hmm. So if I'm just visit my community around there, I've just been charged for this roaming. Yeah. How do even just receiving the calls? Mm-hmm. So that's my worry. Maybe you can just explain that also.
Yeah, I just want to take the advantage that the minister is here,
and we are happy, minister. You can even see our facial expressions that we are happy that we are here. You know, you ministers, you don't take select committees serious. You take what you follow committees in NA serious. And I get so disappointed to find that a minister who was once a member of NCOP does not take the select committee of NCOP serious. When you understand the impact of the work and the volume of the work that we do in the NCOP, I'm not talking about you, I'm just making a general statement. Look, every time when telecommunication is here, we ask one question of the rates and pricing of Vodacom. Until when shall we be promised that this issue is going to be dealt with? Is that your palliative or was said in Dwayne? And we are governing this country. And if anything impacts negatively on our people, we need to be decisive. This is the question that I promise that as long as I'm a member of this committee and a member of parliament, I shall raise it consistently until I cease to be a member of parliament. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable. I'm going to allow Minister to respond. But I must also say I'm glad to see that you're giving attention to those very important things that is really so close to our heart. But as Honourable Malambu was saying, while I was sitting here listening to you, the role players, the big role players, we will still be like, I don't know who was saying this, the black people, don't worry to give them a vote. They will always need a bus, you know? It seems like we will always need those people to be on, you know, on track or these things. I don't know what can you tell us, what can we do to get out and to be on our own. It's starting and it's a beginning, and I think we will be able, but I don't know how long it will take. Over to you, Minister.
Yeah, thanks. There are some of the technical things the official will assist sometimes. But let me start by saying, to be honest, let me take the point that there's no way you can ignore NSOP. Like I said, I came as a senator. We started NSOP. We know the amount of work, because sometimes we think people in the National Assembly have got more work than you. The amount of work and travel and getting mandates and getting people involved is quite significant. I think to us, it's going to be important, maybe let me say in front of officials, that we'll have to engage, even not just to make this a normal presentation where you want us to pass something, the briefing, because the challenge in South Africa is not in the major centers. Is in the outskirts, whether you're from Western Cape, the challenge is not in Cape Town. It may be in the township, it may be in the small dorp outside. That's where we don't have adequate infrastructure. So it's going to be important because when you go to province, you link with the members of legislature who come from those areas. I'm not saying we don't from the National Assembly. But on the, the official may assist, because I also noticed that I used to be traveling between Mpumalanga and KZN. My understanding is that these things, they pick these towers automatically. And all of a sudden, I see I'm roaming in Southern, they see you roaming in Botswana. So the best thing would be to switch off the roaming in your phone, but that if you are closer to those areas. So that we are not constantly roaming. But the officials can deal with the details. Maybe if I start from the beginning, what do we need? We discussed this at length from cabinet, not only the department, what do we need as a country first. Then we can come what we need as a department. What we need, maybe should start with easy ones. From the department, really, we must have people who are based in Geneva. That's why I always tease him. I gave the department the permission to send him to Geneva. Because you don't only start dealing with these things when you come to conference. People are doing studies now, and they're influencing those studies, and it is the basis of those studies which they brought as evidence when you go to the conference in 2019. So it is important that we have a person who is there who's tracking these things and able to come and phone home the specific agencies or departments through us, of course, because we are the coordinating department, to say there's this thing coming, what should be our attitude? Then we can get our specialists, because we can't afford to send them there every day. It's very expensive. But the bigger countries, they have not one, they've got many people in Geneva who are sitting in the study groups, who are processing these things on a daily basis. So, but as a country, what do we need? Skills. Very specific skills. We need engineers, we need electronics, we need all these satellite specialists. I don't know now, because of the fees must fall, what's going to happen. The suggestion went before, because we raised this thing of the importance of it. I think it was President who said, why don't you look at taking maybe a quarter of what we call NESPA funding to deal with scarce skills. Not just poor students, where are you coming, but if you're going to help us with those things, whether it's satellite, whatever, those are the skills we need. We need them big time. We need them if we're going to be on our own. Whether people are going to go through science and technology, collaborate with other countries, but we need skills. We need software engineers. We need integrators. So our kids can be exposed much earlier. We can take them from matric, take them through university if we give them bursaries. We're not looking for loans here. So that we choose our best and capable and take them through. So, but because of the challenges we face now in higher education, I'm not sure. The aim was to start to a small scale next year and then upscale this thing. I think that's what, in my own view, will be the most beneficial thing if we can have a consensus. I think provinces send a lot of students abroad, but they send them sometimes on general things. we have got very good institutions here in South Africa in terms of universities. We have got good partners internationally. Every country is willing to train our students. So if you can give them the bursaries, it's going to be quite critical for me. The... You know, here in Western Cape, we started with the small things in the early years of our democracy, but the Satellite Application Center is now developed to SANSA, which is our space, National Space Agency, South African Space Agency. They are working well. They are collaborating with some of the scientific people in Africa. I know that they're working very closely with the Algerians, who are also very keen on satellite technologies. but they also are trying to engage other key countries who may have resources so that we can do joint ventures to launch this thing. We have launched some satellites, not at a big scale. You remember the first one, we launched it in Russia, but we soon done did. Yeah, someone did. So, so we need to launch more. The Department of Science and Technology, we're working with them to look at low-cost but efficient satellites. That's why they talk of low-orbit cluster satellites, nano-satellites, which are not those big things you launch with and consume so much energy. And they must also remember they die there. Right? They've got a big graveyard for this. they die there in the space. So we're looking at a better technology, which is developed by South Africans to launch new forms of satellites. The the I've mentioned the skills. I think in terms of policy, I am agree. Actually, I was just thinking, how do we introduce this thing to Parliament? Because it's quite big. It's a fundamental shift from what we had as a policy before. It's quite fundamental. The principle which inform it is the Constitution, that we cannot continue to discriminate the poor and the rural anymore. Our Constitution doesn't allow it. So that's where the challenge is. Currently, we are engaging the operators, trying to nudge them. I just had a meeting. I have to come out of the NEC of the ruling party one evening to go just to deal with them. And we're still going to meet between the 11 and the 15. We agreed with the broader industry just to take them through the policy so that we remove this negative perception. And others will say, yeah, you're expropriating. There's no way of expropriation, and we've got no intention of expropriation. But we're saying we're not going to continue to allocate spectrum, which is on high demand, not all of it, what is called high demand spectrum, on exclusive basis to few. So we're going to put them so that on a wholesale access principle, which are allowed by this regulation, so that everyone can have access to it. It is a myth, Chairperson, that only the 6 licensees have got capacity to deliver even our communication services. It's not. Both on the fixed and the mobile side. There are South African companies which are operating in other countries in Africa, but they can't access their own spectrum at all. But we will come and make that presentation so that we engage. And because what we want to do next year, by end of February, we hope that we're going to finalize the implementation plan so that we can start drafting the legislation and amendments. But we would like to engage with you before we do that, so that we take you fully on board on all these issues. The reason why engaging the industry is to not have them run like all over, so that they understand what is the intention, what we're going to do. and they'll talk about harmonization. On the cybersecurity ignorance for public servants, yes. I think we need to do more. That is coordinated by state security on the government side. But I agree with you that individual departments must do more, because even for your own safety, I mean, people are no more looking to break into your offices and take documents. They want to break into your systems, hacking. And on the public side, which leads? That's why we launched this National Cybersecurity Hub. It's run by us, but we launched it. It's based at CSIR. But our focus is to have the public and the companies and the organizations which, to avoid these disruptions, because other people do these things just to disrupt your business activities, not necessarily to steal information. But others, they're doing it to steal your properties, or including your bank accounts. The phishing thing is quite big in South Africa. I think we're number 3 globally. It was US, UK, us. I'm not sure whether it's changed now. That was about 2 years ago. So it's going to become important. It's where they basically they try and hack into your account, try and get your password, they can get into your bank account and then transfer funds. You see? Because what you do, because we're all lazy, we've got so many passwords because we carry many gadgets now. So if I can get access to your code, then I can go and change the credentials in your bank account. It's easy to get your ID. You can get it over internet time. But it's the codes and the passwords which the people are trying to look. They'll send software or to either through a message, these unsolicited things. Where people just send things and then they leave viruses there, which start worms, which start looking through your system and harvesting these codes you have put. I'm trying to put it as simple as I can. So those are the things we normally try and deal with. they'll talk about the satellite at Northwest. engaging countries becomes important even if before you get your approval, but we're not saying we're undermining. Why are we doing so? Because we know some of them, until one country does it, they are scared of repercussions. He may not be the colonial power. He may be the person who's supporting them financially. So there are those type of blackmails, especially for the poorer countries. So those who are independent thinkers, so they should lead the way. It does a system, even when they go to their countries, they say, no, so many countries have already ratified it. So it does help, but not that we are quite aware of our obligations to do these things through Parliament. That's why we're here. I thought the officials should, where was the first slide? In the next time, to come and present these basic things, because that's what we did even, come and say, they are very technical. We are not technicians. Where was the first one which was talking about region? We'll remove it. Yeah. Just to see where these things, but the electromagnetic spectrum, maybe on this one. It's got quite a huge range, but it will tell you which areas of this spectrum are being exploited now. Others have not been exploited, a big chunk of spectrum, because either we don't have technology or the gadgets for that use. So they can take you through the short range, the long range, and so on, what is it used for. But there is another slide which was showing which areas we are using, you had it here just now, which areas are used by defense, which are used by telecommunications, so that we can, I think in that workshop we should start there. That's why I was telling them, because it just give you a sense which areas are exploitable now. And because spectrum is so wide, but it depends on what technologies, what gadgets are you using to exploit it. So that then you can use it. I mean, if you open the gate, you use a very short distance, which are up to 100 meters. So that's why it's free for everybody. It's unregulated spectrum. because you just press it when you're next to your room, then it recognizes. So I thought I should just give those broad ones that let's commit that we will bring on the cyber security and the internet. Just next week we are supposed to go to Mexico, where, because we're the host for the African Continent Internet Governance Forum. We first had the national one in Johannesburg, then in Durban we had the Africa one. We continue to negotiate these things and push the interests of Africa. So that's why we're going there, to push the African interests in those discussions on the internet governance and the internet economy. But also, parallel to this, I'm just mentioning it now, not for briefing, that maybe we should also come and brief you, because while we're preparing for the national one, we had Dr. Khan from America, who was here in Cape Town, who interacted with our academic institutions, all of them, though he came from here, all our universities, major universities. He also communicated with government departments, the officials, because we're exploring this new architecture of internet, which is not centrally based control. It's called multiple administration system. they are doing it. Dr. Khan was basically the father of internet. They are working in the Defense Department. They developed this thing, all these protocols and so on. But then he left to form an NGO in the U.S. What they are really looking at, which is in us, we think is much better than the current system. Because the current system deals with file. You must have a file stored somewhere in somebody's computer. And then because computers are put on a network, you use this network web to get that file and download it if you want to see it, or speak or send something to somebody as a file. So this one is it looks at digital objects other than files, irrespective of where they are. And we have done our work with CETA, with the CSIR, and tested this system, and went back to CABINET to present this year, and CABINET gave us permission, okay, let's explore this. But the benefit of it is that it doesn't matter which language the information is, as long as it's digital and is stored in that format, we know that it's there. It gives you better control that you may say, I give this information that you can access it, but you must identify yourself. Then I'll know who is interacting with my information. So, but also it is persistent because of the format of it. It's not just a type file which is stored. Sometimes you look something on the internet, it comes, you are, oh, sorry, file can't be found. It's no more there. File disappears. So, but we'll come and brief you on it. But it's also got better security because some of the best uses, the U.S. Congress is using it for its library system. The Germans, I think they're using for their scientific information. The Chinese, they use it successfully to deal with fake products, what the counterfeit. Remember the Chinese milk which was killing babies? Now they can't because they're making fake. So it's digitized, you can scan it and see whether, even when you're buying it, is it authentic? Was it supposed to be sold in this shop? Who's the owner? All that information, you can just scan it and get it because we need a digital format. But we will brief you on that. There were two or three technical questions.
Deal with the three questions before to be already.
Yeah.
Very thank you very much, and thank you to the honorable members for the questions. The minister has touched on a number of them. With regard to the job creation slide, I think it's quite, and also maximizing on the economies of scale. The reason why, as the minister indicated, one of the political discussions that we're trying to push is to separate Africa from region one, which is Europe, because of this dominancy issue. This will allow us to then be able to manufacture our own devices and to also explore if we cannot work with other regions and therefore other markets, especially the emerging markets, for us to grow our own capabilities as a country. So we can have those proudly South African initiatives. So that's what we were referring it to there. The minister has indicated on the cybersecurity, but just to elaborate that under the JCPS, one of the clusters, we actually deal, there is a subcommittee that is dealing on cybersecurity. So there is collaboration with the department, state security, defense, as well as others. But more than anything else, our awareness programs, we also mainstreaming them in terms of other government departments as well. We're working, especially those ones with the front line of services. So we're working with the Department of Home Affairs, we're working with the Department of Social Development and others. But our awareness strategy is it's continuously being reviewed to make sure that the importance of cybersecurity to the citizens. The question with regard to the negotiators, the minister or cabinet will decide as to who then the chief negotiator, but I think obviously in terms of the political decision, it's led by the ministers, and then the ministers will delegate the officials to then lead. We normally then would make sure that we give feedback daily as well as weekly reports in terms of how far we are in advancing the national position.
But maybe just add that all the departments, all the relevant, there are about 17 or 23 departments which were part of this.
Part of this, especially on the time. So also just to indicate that before we go, even now, we're going to start, after we finish this ratification, we're going to start with the national consultative process for the next WRC. We normally have about five or so national consultative platforms outside. This is with industry. But prior to that, we would have consulted with government to make sure that we get the mandate, because obviously industry will come with its own self-interest. So we've set the framework within government first, and we're also guided by the ECA. So these particular spectrums that relate to your securities, the Electronic Communications Act, it indicates that, the minister must set aside exclusively a spectrum for security services as well as for your public services. So your ambulances and others, they also have specific spectrum that is designed, as well as for research. And it's indicated that we've got the SKA, so we need to make sure that we protect that. It feeds back into our economy as well. And then we do have in government interdepartmental meetings, like the international one. We meet on a monthly basis. So there's common positions. So even if it's an area related to your environment, we make sure that there's an alignment, and then we also support them as equally they would be supporting us as well. And then with regard to some of the challenges, maybe just to as a final, no doubt the issue of roaming, we've been grappling with it. Roaming within SADC as well as national roaming has been there, and we do appreciate the comments as well as, you know, the concerns shared by the honorable members. So this will assist us to make sure that from a regulatory perspective, there's transparency. But over and above that, part of the ICT policy is that we want to regulate it. We want to be able to go to the operators to say, this is the cap that, you know, and unfortunately, even within SADC, South Africa is being seen as the one that is holding this issue of reducing the cost to communicate. So that is why we're trying to urgently try to fast-track this ratification. The minister touched on the issues of skilling. The last one is on resources. We don't have adequate, you know, if you compare to other countries, South Africa and Nigeria are the few countries within the continent that actually, when it comes to spectrum, is the most lucrative entity, you know, a public entity thing that you can have as a country. And it can either contribute to your economy or it can kill your economy. So if you look at Nigeria, Nigeria's got over 300 officials dealing with spectrum in government. The department, we have two. So we need to build these skills, as the minister indicated. We need to make sure that as government, we are able to calculate the value add of spectrum before we can just give it out. So that's why we're embarking on this particular area of training and making sure that we have the adequate skills in this area. Honorable Mita, the issue of the non-connectivity to skills, I'm going to pass it on to our Universal Service Agency, and I'll make sure that they will get in touch with you. Similarly to your regional internet exchange points, they do provide capacity and services as well. So the one in Durban covers for Eastern Cape, and then obviously the one in Joburg will cover for Northwestern. So it's
but they are planning to develop in go to other secondary towns like East London and Mthatha, and for on that the internet service provider themselves on their own. They are planning.
Yes. So there are those capabilities that are there. And then on roaming, we are hoping that we need to work with the CASA, the regulator, in addressing this particular issue of roaming. And we share equal concerns. I must, without naming which operator, we share equal concerns. And as I said, if we really want for the country, so everybody must have the same interest for South Africa, and therefore we mustn't try and block with regard to the high cost. I'm hoping that, the last one on the satellite in Hasties, that is actually owned by Telkom, and that one was started way back whilst, you know, under the old Department of Telecommunications when we were telecoms and postal. So we actually use it, and it is actually a national resource, so it's not a foreign-owned entity. But however, we also make sure that we regulate other satellite that are there, especially those in terms of foreign, so that we make sure that as a country we preserve the issues of security. And thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we all need to ask more questions, but the reality is...
There are two questions I pose. The minister will respond to them.
Honorable members, yeah. Ministers, I am going to allow you, but the reality is the same committee push for another committee to come and present. So they must keep that in mind.
Yeah.
They ask for that committee to come and present. But is there two questions that you still need to...
Thank you. I think she did try to ask the High Court of Vodacom. What we've done, maybe that's what we're doing. As a minister, I've got the power to issue directions to the regulator. The first regulation we issued last year, it was one on transparency. It has helped a bit, but there is on pricing, transparency on pricing. They are currently trying to implement it. The second one we issued this year in March is that one of effective competition in the broadband market, fixed mobile, or all the segments. So ICASA is still doing their study now, because that's what will tell us what directives we can, and regulation ICASA must put to actually cap that, because I agree with you. I meet with them all the time. So your data costs are very high. You are causing us problems because now the nation is in this mood. So we hope that as soon as ICASA, because we have to follow that process, I can't direct before ICASA does study. on the Infraco is a fixed band operator. But we can engage on it. Yes.
Can you please, because the reality is the Honorable Member went out to him. I don't think...
I'll speak to it. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your time. I'm sorry about it.
Thank
we
you.
All are very excited to hear more about this very important topic, but we are going to organize a joint workshop where we can have all the information and answer relevant questions. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
For your time. Thank you for being here. And we really appreciate it.
Thank you,
thank you very much.
Before I leave, Honorable Member, you ask a question. Do you want to ask a question?
No, I just want to make a statement on the
No, I want to plead with the minister to come back.
I will.
Thank you very much. Minister, you want to say something?
Now, I was saying, I know Parliament has got constrained resources. But sometimes it does help to send even if it's a small delegation. Not the whole time, but maybe to go to some of these conferences, because they are quite critical. Even if you send a representative delegation, it will help. Unfortunately, the department, we can't carry it, but I think it will help if the members who deal with these matters can be exposed to these things, even at an international level. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your report.
How are you?
We have to vote on these two reports. Report of the Select Committee on Communications and Public Enterprises of the International Telecommunications Regulations 2012, tabled in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution 1996, dated 13 November 2016. The Select Committee on Communications and Public Enterprises having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the International Telecommunications Regulations 2012, tabled in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution 1996, referred to its table in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution 1996, recommend that the Council approve the said agreement report to be considered. Can I have a proposal?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chairperson, are we voting for them together? Because it's two different reports.
It's a one, and then the second one I'm going to read is the one report now.
Okay.
I'm going to read the second one.
report of the Select Committee on Communications in Public Enterprises on the World Radio Communications Conference 2015, WRC 15 Final X Table, in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution 1996, dated 13 November 2016. The Select Committee on Communications in Public Enterprises, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the World Radio Communications Conference 2015, WRC 15, Final Act, refers to it and tables in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution 1996, recommends that the Council approves the said Final Act report to be considered. Can I have a proposal in a second for this report, the second one? Thank you. Honourable Singh, propose, and Honourable Safar, second. Honourable,
are we voting individually, Chairperson, or?
As a committee.
If you have Chairperson, as a committee, we have the right to do a minority report.
Now, if you want to do so, you're welcome to do it.
Just, I think what Honourable Julius was asking, is there a opportunity for that?
If you so wish, you can.
Thank
you. Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Just clarity on the wording, firstly. Are we approving the final X or the ratification of the final X? I think there must just be clarity in the wording. I would support the World Radio Communication Conference 2015 final X, the ratification of it, the second one, and the first
radio
one.
Radio communication.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the first one not.
The also you're not going to vote for this.
No.
You want us to note, then yes, to note your identity. I'm not sure. Going to vote. They are in favor of voting for this. Noted.
You don't have to call it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we invite the Department of Public Interest? You're welcome to. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you. become quite harmful to myself.
My name is Omi Singh, member of this committee, representing KwaZulu-Natal.
Good morning or good day. Kamala Mdungupelpa is a member of the committee.
Good afternoon, Charles Julius, member of the committee from Gauteng.
Good afternoon, Kathy Lamskagne, member of the committee, Western Cape.
Good day, I'm Nkagisang Koni, member of this committee representing Northern Cape.
Good morning, Bayer Schmidt, member of committee representing Limpopo.
Professor Clark is behind me, my special advisor. And in the corner over there, in line, is Colin Trevor. Inati, do you want to just introduce your team?
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, my team, we're from Essex Press. My name is Inati Njanga. I'm the CEO. Sitting on the far right is Mark Shelley, the chief financial officer. Next to Mark Shelley is Miriam Mutwili. She's the head of legal risk and compliance. Next to, on this side, it's Mimi Atias, who is the head of performance management and project management. And then next to her is Marina Alshi, who is the company secretary of the company.
Sorry, Chair, and then Kali, who is the PLO, and I think I saw Edward in the room, who actually should come to person because he is responsible for transport. He's responsible for FX6 but in the transport unit. And Mark should come to person because he's the CFO.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I think we are going to start this meeting. We are glad that you responding positive on our request to come and present to us something. We are very concerned about a lot of issues. And I'm happy that you are here so that we, our members, to raise the concern, can ask the relevant questions so that we can clarify and understand what is going on. Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I'm going to allow you. I don't know if you want to say something before we move on to the presentation. Say something.
Chair, thank you very much, and thank you very much to honourable members, CE and CFO of Essexpress and so. The presentation today covers the workings of Essexpress. I have been told that there are some difficulties that members have had with actual flights. The actual working of SA Express in your lives. So those kind of questions I think we'll just leave to SA Express. It's a very similar problem I've had as well. I just have their numbers that I can wake them up at any time when it happens to me. But the context of the airlines is still rooted in the fact that at the last budget, budget day, the Minister of Finance announced that SA Express and SAA and Mango were going to merge. And so very much the companies are in a little bit of a flux, I think, because there is a merger plan. They've got to maintain their companies until the merge happens. But as you know, that there are guarantees attached to it. There are issues, I mean, for both airlines, actually. They have guarantees. And National Treasury, being the custodian of our fiscus, is hesitant to release the full amount of guarantees into this airline so that we could I think what I'd like you to allow, Chair, is for IFA Express to make its presentation. I just wanted to give that context, and then I think the number of questions that you might have, you just raise it, there are enough people here to answer it, and we answer the questions that you have, but I just wanted to give that context. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Listening to you now, I think there's a need that we must ask for a joint
yes.
A joint committee meeting with the portfolio of the finance. I think there's a need that we need to ask for a joint. Everyone, all the members in agreement? Thank you. Can we give over to
thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank you very much to the members of the Select Committee. Thanks, Minister, for allowing us to come and present to the committee. What we will cover today is just the purpose of Office Express, the vision, the values. Then we'll move into our strategy, our strategic objectives, what are the highlights of the strategy, what is our network, some of the challenges we faced with the CAE at the beginning of the year, what measures have we taken from an austerity. We had what we call the austerity measures plan, and then some of the challenges that are facing the airline. Okay, just our purpose is to be, I guess, a sustainable regional airline that connects secondary towns with main airports. What we mean by that is that we don't fly Joburg to Cape Town, Joburg to Durban, because we consider Joburg to be a main airport of a hub.
Sorry, see, can I ask you to just do high level so that we get a discussion, that the members get an opportunity. We don't often have occasion to be with the members on this portfolio. So I want you to just do really high level, because I think members have had some of this information before already.
Chair, I guess through you, Chair and Minister, maybe I don't know whether you want me to take the presentation as read, and then I guess really highlight one or two points per slide. Okay.
I just want you to run.
You can just summarize.
Okay. All right. So we've got a purpose, we've got a vision, which is to grow in Africa. And of course, we've got the values. One of them is safety. And I'm highlighting safety because it's what drives some of these delays that we talk about. Then in terms of the strategy, we've got a strategy called the 2020 vision, which looks at us now and SA Express going forward in the next 20 years. And learning from the last 20 years that the airline has operated. If we go further, our strategic objective, and that is to be a catalyst for key developmental. We've got two mandates. We've got a developmental mandate, and then we've got a commercial mandate to be a sustainable regional airline on the continent, to work on customer service, hire people with skills and train them, job creation organization, and to expand in Africa. Just on the highlight, we're working closely with SAA, and that this is part of our 2020 strategy. We're working closely with SAA and the Star Alliance to improve our route network. We are still working with SAA to create a single feeder airline for SAA. That way, it gives the customers a better customer service
especially when it comes to connectivity. And that leads to us optimizing our network. We are working now on the right fleet for the regional market, which is the difference between big aircraft and small aircraft, as you would know, and they serve different purposes. If I go further, we are working with DINEL to basically look at an MRO. We've signed an MOU with them. Then, of course, we're still highly involved in leading transformation, especially in the critical areas like pilots and technicians, hiring very young 20-something-year-old pilots that have very few hours or that have no hours at all, that aspire to fly, and train them and make them pilots. And then, of course, one of the biggest thing, and it's been a driver of last year, has been the funding of the business. I think in our discussion, we've always said these businesses, I mean, have never been properly funded. If we go back to how SA Express was founded, it was started as a private airline, but when it was bought over by government, it was not, or by Transnet back then, it was never properly funded. In terms of the network, of course, the airline intends to increase the network, and the challenges there are still high operational costs. And what has happened is that with the economy being in a near recession and low growth, corporates have started looking at innovative ways of doing their own business by reducing their cost. One of our business is 75% business and 25% leisure. So as corporates are finding different ways of doing their own business to cut costs, it actually leads to loss of revenue. What are we doing on the fleet? Maybe just the current fleet is 10 aircraft, the Dash 8, the turboprops, two CRJ-700s, those are the 70-seater, and eight CRJ-200s. Our intention is to streamline the fleet first by having two types, because now we have three types. By having two types, we're looking at bringing in new or young aircraft to operate for SA Express, and so we're seeing by as of next year we should start seeing aircraft coming in, and then they will come in until here we stopped at 2019. By 2019 we see young aircraft, because the challenge is the aircraft currently are fairly old. We've got aircraft that are 18 years old. Young in aircraft terms, but they tend to be more expensive to fix because the parts are not readily available all the time. The newer fleet tends to have more available capacity of parts, and they are quicker to fix, and they've got honeymoon periods and so on. So we're looking to move towards that. Just on the CAA and I'm hoping no one was affected. Around the month end of April, the CAA temporarily suspended our license, and we were able to have a discussion with them. Not discussion, actually. We were able to produce the paperwork that they were looking for, and we were able to resolve the matter within 48 hours, and it was a weekend. We've learned from that incident that we must really report better than we did before, and understand the questions and what is needed, rather than the way we handled it. Then, when it comes to our plan, as I said, we had the 2020 vision, which is a long-term strategy. It's going to take us over 20 years. But one thing that was missing was the cost element on this strategy. It was focusing on revenue, it was focusing on, you know, working closer with SAA, it was focusing on building technical and so on and so on. But one area was the cost.
and we were seeing that the costs were starting to outperform the revenue coming into the business. So we had to go back to the drawing board and revisit that. This light, the committee has seen, I think, in our office in Johannesburg. It's still the same slide, exact slide. What we said is we would save certain costs. So we went and reviewed all our costs, starting from catering, passenger handling, fuel costs, certain contracts we had with South African Airways, ground handling, maintenance contracts, and of course, without compromising safety. I want to say that up front because it tends to be an issue to think that we're taking shortcuts. One thing we don't do is we will never fly an aircraft that we believe is unsafe. Pilots are trained to do that. Technicians are trained to do that. Leadership is trained not to influence any of those decisions. And it's something that we would rather fire people if they try to take chances when it comes to the safety of our aircraft. We looked at the inventory that was in-house. We looked at the leases. And of course, we had to optimize our schedule. We didn't want to fly aeroplanes that were half full. We optimized them, went to fly to different destinations so that we can improve our occupancy rate of our aircraft. And we also looked at labor. And I'll quickly talk about that. Actually, the next slide just shows the progress in 2016. Our target, if you go back, was 276. As per the previous slide. By year end, we'd saved about 326 on those elements, as shown there. One area, of course, that's always difficult is the area of labor, but I can tell you we have not had any retrenchments in the organization. We just, you know, operated under natural attrition, and we've managed to reach the targets that we're looking at. Just additionally, we have additional initiatives that we've implemented this year, starting in April, that we are currently implementing. I mean, we are still committed to developing pilots, but instead of really using the funds that are coming from our revenue, what we've done is we've partnered up with TITA, and they've managed to give us some funds so that we can train more cadets. They've given us funds to train technicians, and so on. So we've managed to, you know, do exactly what we wanted to do by partnering with our other interested stakeholders. Then I think the major challenge is, of course, we are still working with the relationship. As the minister said, this also talks through the whole issue of what the Minister of Finance had said. You know, how do we structure ourselves going forward as the business? And that, those are discussions going forward. Or in this case, you know, how do our shareholders structure us? We support we will probably support the final product, and we are keen to work with everybody. The second challenge is still the fleet. The fleet is aging. And we've seen lack of spares, which delays us from getting our aircraft back up in the sky. And of course, the costs, with the rand having depreciated, we saw, I think, a 26% reduction, which means that some of the costs, like the spares, we buy those in dollars. The leases, we lease most of our aircraft in dollars. Well, 50% of our aircraft are leased in rands and 50% are leased in dollars. And meaning automatically, you know, about 13%, you see the increase in the cost of leases. Now, what have we done? And this is not on the slide. When we picked up this, especially this year, we lost a lot of availability of our fleet. Due to spares availability. We then decided, okay, what do? We reduce our flights and serve less people, or do we try and maintain that? I think the decision was that we will still continue to fly as many times so that we can be able to be available to people in South Africa. We've leased in aircraft ad hocly, which is very expensive. It's a very expensive exercise. While we try to fix our own aircraft, we've now relooked at that, and we're saying, now that we've actually managed to finalize a loan with one of the banks so that we can be able to clean up the spares and be able to fix those aircraft. We're looking by beginning of next year to have fixed the aircraft, especially over the Christmas break, so that the entire fleet of Easy Express can be available, and so that we can improve our service to our customers. So effectively, and this is the last slide, I've really gone very far. We're trying to address the revenue, we're trying to address the cost, and of course the people, the fleet, so that we can improve the reputation of the company. I thank you.
Let's appreciate the presentation and the availability of the minister. We missed you, minister. Chair, I put my hand up because I'm gonna leave at about 22:30. There are four things that I want to talk about. One, the CEO is talking about the maintenance plan or maintenance contract. But then I'm interested to know whether do you have any mechanism to monitor closely that maintenance contract. The second issue relates to the transformation in the establishment. We are talking about, or you spoke about, preparing pilots, preparing certain people to be part of the management. I want the CEO to be explicit. If you talk of preparing, well, what is the meaning of preparing? You can prepare them for 10 years, you can prepare them for 15 years, and then transformation is tampered with, or it lags behind. But my narrow understanding says, if you talk of transformation, you put a particular plan, a very calibrated plan, to say, this is my plan in terms of transformation. I want in the next 6 months to have trained so many technicians. I want in the next 7 years or 2 years to have trained so many pilots. I want these 5 young men, black in color, few females, black in color, to be in the senior responsible positions in the establishment. I want you to talk about that. The third issue that I want to talk to is professionalism. You know, as members of society, I don't want to say as members of parliament, but as members of society, Honourable Minister, you will find that sometimes you are so disparate, you are left stranded in our airports. If a particular plane is delayed, nobody has a decency to talk to members of the society. And it talks to your reputation that you are reflecting in your presentation. Just a decency to say, this plane going to East London or PE is delayed because of this and that. It gives hope and proper image of the establishment. And that need to improve, Honorable Minister. I want to state it here. The second issue is, if you go, you fly from East London, you connect to Bloemfontein, via Joburg.
your flight is delayed, nobody takes the responsibility, because if you leave, I mean, you are left behind by the flight or your connecting flight. It can be. Members of the society cannot be held responsible for that. If a plane is delayed, and when it's delayed, yet you still have a connecting flight. And if you miss that particular flight, you'll have to sleep over or wait for the whole day for an afternoon flight. If the afternoon flight is full, you are forced to take the next flight the following day, at whose cost and expenditure. These are critical issues that we need to talk about. This is my submission, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I have got a few questions. The first one is the impact that this planned merger is having on the future of SA Express, and which role it will play within the merger. I can remember when we did our first oversight over SAA and SA Express and all of that in Johannesburg. I think it was either just after in 2014 or early 2015. And, you know, at that stage I was quite impressed by the presentations, you know, that SA Express is actually doing quite well in comparison with SAA. And it is concerning, you know, to find that SA Express is also in a crisis stage. And you know, what happened from there to now, you know, to actually create this crisis, you know, because I really felt at that stage, you know, I was going home thinking, you know, the management of SA Express is going well, you know, and there's really the potential if we can duplicate that within SAA. And then we also had discussions about, because I believe that one of SA Express as well as SAA's big customers is us as members of parliament as well, because we travel a lot up and down from our constituencies and our homes and, you know, to different spaces. And it was raised as well, you know, for example, SA Express don't serve the space from where I come from in Polokwane, you know, to Joburg or whatever. And the limitations, you know, for that, because obviously, you know, SA Express should also play a big role in almost stimulating, you know, movement to stimulate economical growth and all of that, because that's important in that. And we raised the point that there's a whole lot of members who's flying up and down. For example, for me to fly from Polokwane, then land in at Oor Tambo, having a 3-hour space in between, then connecting to Cape Town. And it was said they will be looked at, for example, that, you know, how does SA Express at this stage decide on how to develop its routes? And making sure that it actually, because what I'm concerned about actually, let me come down to the base of the issue that I want to address, is it was said that SA Express is a feeding airline to SAA, and now with the merger, is it still going to play that role, or is it going to become, you know, you do this section and you do that section? I think let me stop there, and if I have other points that I feel, I'll raise them later.
Thank you, Chair. A lot of questions already been asked. I want to start off by focusing on the merger. I would like to know, does the department know, or does the department and all the SA Express know, what is the time frame for this merger? Because I understand what the minister explained, that the Minister of Finances announced that a merger should take place. But in the meantime, there's still a 20-year plan and a turnaround strategy on the books for SA Express. Now, I would like to know, does the financial status of SA Express and SAA at this moment, but let us focus on SA Express because you can speak for yourself, does that play a role? Does that, do you have to prove to be financially viable and without debt before the merger will take place? Is there anything that you can give this committee? Because that will have to give us guidelines and how to look at this in future and to understand what's going on. Then I would also like to know, in the 2020 vision, you talk about a new business model. Now, and the vision of the new business model gives certain guidelines as on page 5. I would like to know, and I can't remember, I don't have that with me, how much difference is there in the strategic objectives of SA Express in the new business model in comparison to the previous business model? And if there's no changes, where is the changes going to happen except in cutting operational costs? You understand what I'm asking. And then I just want to know that, let me just get all these questions. In 2013, the turnaround strategy was already mentioned for SA Express, and from then on, it just became more and more important and obvious that something needs to be done. Now, according to that graph that you gave us on page, I don't know which one is that, the austerity measures and 3-year targets that you showed, some of these things has been negotiated and in place, and some of them are very difficult, like the royalty payments and the labor review and some of those that are a bit more difficult. From 2013 to now 2016, that is 2-3 years, what is the, in layman's term, for us who don't know really, we don't understand the intricate details of SA Express, but we have to explain why we're saying what we're saying as politicians and say SA Express is not a going concern, what is the difference that to the debt of SA Express and the revenue created? So in what financial position is SA Express since you started with the new business model? And what guarantees do you have based on the evidence that you have now that this model is sustainable in the future until the merger takes place? And then I just want to, one of the things that you stated, and I don't have it now, but that the customer service is important to SA Express. It is a big concern, because as we're sitting here, you honestly, open and honestly shared with us various instances that you have a problem. But as clients of the service, I'm very concerned, because more and more you hear of people's experiences, and I know of my own colleague's experience on the 19th of November, as an example, had to leave East London, Buffalo City, had to disembark the plane, waited, got to the next plane, had to stay over the night and come
next flight the next day due to safety. Yeah, safety, insecure. Yeah, there was they were not sure. Yeah, technical problems. Now that brings me, and then also the flight between the regular flights. So, for instance, on a Thursday between PE and Cape Town, there's a 7 or 8 o'clock flight and a 9 o'clock flight. But when you book, nobody tells you that they say they put these two flights together, they combine these two flights. But when you get there, there's an hour delay every time that you get there. This is not customer service. If we combine flights, just be open and honest and tell people the 7 hour flight or the 8 o'clock flight is not available anymore. When you want to leave PE on a Thursday or whatever day, you need to take only this flight. Then it comes to the renewal of the fleet, the guarantee that's being done at this stage to SA Express. Will that enable the company, the SA Express, the entity, to renew their fleet to the optimal, or up to what level, or will you have to make use of other ways to increase to renew and maintain the fleet? Because if you renew it, then there must be a maintenance plan for the new fleet, and nobody is talking about that. But I gather that when we talk about renewal, we also take into consideration the maintenance of the new fleet. And then on page 7, the strategy highlight the SA Express strategy, supporting joint or business ventures in future to diversify revenue. The airline has entered into partnerships with provincial entities. Now, in itself, it's not a problem. I'm just asking, provincial entities is funded by government money. So it's just another form of, it's not like corporate businesses out there or another stream of income, or do I interpret it incorrectly? Because it's just funding from the government itself again. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Lavaskaki. Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chair.
No, it was Singh when he was not.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think I'll give you a first-hand experience of my flight this morning. On the 610 from Durban to Cape Town, the 1850 Express. And I realized that I'm going to meet you guys, and I said, let me take this particular flight and get some experience when I meet. I didn't expect the minister to be here, but it's good that she's here. I had some concerns as the plane took off. When the wheels got in, I just thought, will this wheel come out? Because the way it squeaked and got in, I worried from Durban to Cape Town, when I'm going to land here, will this come off again so it can land? Maybe it was my imagination. I was sitting at a point where the wheels were just under me, but I just wanted to say that for 2 hours, somebody has to think about, will this wheels come off again for it to land? It's a concern. I think that the safety aspect, because of what one hears about the SA Express, so you have this concern. Minister, I think that the trainer had only 16 passengers, I think it was a 50-seat, and I just thought, what a waste. Because how much would this earn between Durban and Cape Town for this airline to run that trip? There should be some other plan for those kind of situations, because while I was also in the plane, I've been reading a Kulula.com. Kulula has got a flight from Durban to Lanseria at 699 special. And I saw that and I said, hey, you know, it's a good cheap flight from my chum from Johannesburg who's come to Durban. You know, just simply take the Kulula from Lanseria and come to Durban. It's so cheap. compared to driving down from Johannesburg. But this kind of things is marketing that we need to do, where we need to inform the public so that we don't run a 16 people on a 50-seater plane. And the other thing I think I experienced, before my other experience, I want to say the merger, I'd like to know how far is the merger in place. I know that I got a gut feel, the merger will help the Mango SA and Express a great deal. We will have one entity, one plane, one service with these three. I know that when we did mergers in other cases, maintenance could be done, staff could be interchanged, so much could be done with the merger. So my question is, by when do you think this merger would be in place? And one other bad experience I had with SA, I just want to say it here while the minister is here. The supervisor at the terminal instructed or asked one of the staff members to take me not so long ago to a quick exit because I was delayed a bit. And the person took me and then disappeared. I came back to the supervisor and I said, this person was leading me but then disappeared. And the attitude was, I know that kind of person. I know the person. Meaning that I know, yeah. And I said, why do you keep people like this here? Because I sit on this committee, and I'm experiencing it. What about the ordinary member who wouldn't be able to voice it at any point, who wouldn't use this airline in the future? Because she's very upset. Because the person should have at least taken me to the quick exit because I was, the plane was about, I missed the plane. I did miss that day. I couldn't. I went across to BA and got another flight and I got back home that evening. So I just wanted to say this is the thing that as members experience. What about the public out there? What are they, who do they voice it to? And do we lose business because of that? Chair, I think that the last one and the attitude of staff, I think we need to have some kind of thing at our airports. Our staff are not really like the staff of other airlines. Other airline staff, I get a call from BA when it's close to the Tamil flight. Are you coming, Mr. Singh? Are you boarding? Because they want to use that seat to do a standby, sell it to a standby passenger. I realize it, and I'll tell him, no, I'm in the airport and parking my car or something like that. Okay, fine, we'll see you. We'll have your boarding pass ready. I feel good that they tell me that I'll have your boarding pass ready. When I get there, but you don't get that from SAA, you know, and then you lose that seat. You don't sell it to somebody else. It's a loss. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Juliet. She was the last one.
Oh.
I remember after you, it's Honorable Nita and then
Mr. Pahul. No, Chair, thank you. I thought I'll give it to the lady, but it's fine. Chairperson, just two issues. One, firstly, the merger. I heard Honorable Singh stating now how far the merger is because it will certainly help. But the merger can only help if SAA is stabilized. And we have reason to believe that SAA is not yet stabilized. There are some political issues in SAA that's from top down, issues within SAA itself, management board, and so forth. So how far can we say is SAA stabilized in order to accommodate this merger or set in place something to speed up the merger. Secondly, Chairperson, in terms of SA Express also, Minister Kikhava praised SAA
think it was in 2012 or so, when he said that it was actually the jewel of state-owned enterprises since 2011, or up to 2011, and since then, everything went wrong. No profits and all other, I think they had 6 or 8 incidents in those years up to now. You know, it's really sad to see that we're losing this. What were the real issues? Was it management or so? Because if we don't find the problem, we will never be able to get to a solution in SA Express. Did the department do a thorough analysis of what actually happened during these years? Certainly it cannot be only overnight we had a technical problem, or overnight something happened. There must be an analysis that the department did to see what we can do as a way forward to help SA Express. And then it was stated also that the license, the suspension for the license, basically major concerns were raised by the regulator in terms of SA Express. We don't know whether it's in terms of safety alone or other areas. But, you know, if I had to come, it was specifically asked, what are the problems with SA Express? And if you asked me to come to a meeting with the select committee, I would have brought you evidence to say that this is the problem, but this is what we have done. Everything is okay now. Can you see there's a certificate there, this and this and this. SA Express sadly brought nothing, or didn't even come to tell us that these are the reasons why we cannot give you this information, because there are safety concerns and so forth. But at least come with something in your hand to say that, listen, this is actually a certificate. The regulator says, we are fine now. But I mean, if you leave here today and we don't see anything, we take your word for it again, like in previous times. And we cannot just leave empty-handed to say that, okay, fine, now it's right until next year we have problems again with SA Express. The last one, Chairperson, SA Express, I want to know, is it currently in a commercial agreement, and what is the extent, if so, what is the extent of that, the details of that commercial agreement, and how will it impact on a future commercial agreement with SAA? Because I think that is what the minister is actually intending, that future there must be a commercial agreement between SA Express and SAA. Are they currently in, and what will the impact be? Will it be a smooth transition? Thank you, Chair. Now I'm asking whether it's currently in, Minister, is it currently in a commercial agreement? Because it still falls under public enterprises. No. Anyone, and it will go into one with SAA. What will the impact be?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to start on page 2 of the document, where the entity is saying they are aspiring to provide consistent and efficient customer service. I just want to say on that one, your page statement, in terms of what on day-to-day basis we are experiencing, I think you need to work harder to be a world-class regional airline. Chair, first, now I will start with serious experiences. If we are told that the department, the entity has started its turnaround plan in 2013, and now we are still experiencing
serious problem. You know, the issue of the 21st of this month takes the cake, Honorable Minister. Where you have booked for 3 o'clock flights, you are taken for 8 o'clock flights. Without anyone calling you, you sit at the airport up until that time. And again, when it's 8 o'clock flight, it gets further delayed for 2.5 hours. Past 9, you book the plane. When you are 25 minutes up, you are told it's going back, technical fault. Until 12 o'clock, you are sitting at the airport from 3 o'clock flight. You know, most if it's 3 o'clock flight, you get there even earlier than that time. The issue of phoning people and telling them your experience. And it was not only the Cape Town, the East London Cape Town flight. It was the same problem with the Johannesburg flight. I remember we were with Mr. Goldberg. He was saying he's planning to leave East London because of SAA. It has implications to the economy of our region. If you continue having these problems, because the fact that you book a flight, it's because you are managing your time. If, for instance, myself was supposed to debate, I couldn't debate because I have got a flight the following day, even not the first one, the worst part of it, the second flight, yet I slept over because of SAA. As I expect. So I just want to show you the frustration that community general was. It's not only us as members of parliament, it's also our business people, it's also trade unionists, you name it. Everyone is rushing for a meeting. We get disorganized. This week, Monday, our flight of 3 o'clock was delayed for 2.5 hours. It can't be. If I'm quoting it correct, Auditor General, when he's saying ESA Express is no longer a going concern, I think I fully agree with them. The ESA Express has to put their act in order or else they must leave the business. They can't run the business. Worst part of it, they are staff. If you complain about it, they don't know who can write to head office. What is that? When you frustrate people that much, up to 12 o'clock midnight, you are even unable to find accommodation to sleep for those that are not staying in East London. It was a hassle the whole night. I think I want to start there so that you understand our frustration, Minister. And also the CEO, which has a phone that was dead. Otherwise, you... Your God saved you on that day. And again, Chair, I am looking at their report here. It is saying they failed to table an annual report. That is serious. And it's not only for this financial year. It has been happening. It is like... Look at this report here. It is from the department. They delayed. They continue to delay. Of course, they continue to delay presenting the annual report. It's not acceptable to do that. Why do you fail to submit your annual report? Because it's a business that you do every day to table your annual report. And it's even worse to say, they are not even sure if it's going to be ready at any time soon. That's your report. Which means no one is serious about it. Happy that the CFO is here. If it was in my own company, I wouldn't be having the CFO by now. And again, I want to know the other point. The SA Express was grounded at some point. And I want to know, after it has been grounded, things that you have done to change the situation.
and also to know how old is your fleet. Because your page 16 and page 15 continue to talk about the aging fleet. How old is your fleet, and also what is the standard time frame for your flights? Because even the yesterday's one, the caps were, whilst it was flying, it was chasing right through up to Cape Town. So again, you get scared. The other one, technical fault, the other one shaking up to Cape Town. So it, to me, as a lay person, it says something about the lifespan of the flights, which drives me to the point that we really need a joint sitting with NA, with SAA Express, and visit the SAA Express flights with people that have technical know-how, because I promise you, we no longer trust their fleet. The other point is on the issue of a pledge for a monitoring and oversee the full implementation of the correcting your plan. There's something that says in your report. I just want to know, how far are you with those? Those are my questions.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Member, Honourable Chair, Minister. I think inputs by Honourable Members bear testimony to the huge challenge that the entity is indeed faced with. But maybe going to the question, what thorough analysis have been you made that says if you go for the measure with Mengu, that can alleviate the challenges that you are finding? Or perhaps you are going to find yourself operating within the belly of Mengu. Or will it be a 50-50 which can improve the situation that is confronted? Maybe lastly, if I heard you well, you mentioned that an aircraft are at some point in the honeymoon the period. And what is the honeymoon period? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think we must just accept that SAX is in crisis. My first submission would be, what is your strategy to reduce delays? Since your flights delay, happen to delay, if not always, but most of the times. Because we know that for a fact that you will have to always wait for a flight, but a flight will never wait for you. Now, and that is, it's very unfair. My question would be on your annual report, because it can't be that a report has to delay for more than 2 years, the annual report that you submit. It's here. Minister, don't shake your head. The 2010-2011 financial statements to Parliament on time. Financial statements were both submitted to Parliament in October 2013. That was supposed to be on 2011-2012. Now, I think the SAX is in very serious crisis. The flight delays, there's a chaos with regards to missing of luggage. I had that experience myself. I was forced to sleep in Johannesburg, and I had to make sure that I arranged my own accommodation. So I'm not thinking about myself, I'm thinking about other people who would not be able to make arrangements to see to it that they sleep until they get their bags or until the arrangements are made. I was together with the chairperson of this very same committee, the Honorable Prince, that day, that night, in Owar Tambo. Yes, so I'm just imagining if it happens to us, what about ordinary South Africans? What happens in a case of where a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old is sent on a flight, it delays? What happens to those kids? A lot of my questions were covered by the previous speakers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Smith.
Thank you. My apology for going on the second, but it's something that I just remembered after the first question. I would like to know, in terms of the merger, the cost impact that it is having on the loss of the brand, because obviously, you know, with the merger, there's going to certain brands and logos and whatever is going to go, you know, paper and uniforms and I would like to know, in terms of that, the cost impact that it's going to have in terms of the brand alone.
Thank you very much. My questions is all so uncovered. It was about the delay, the report, tabling of the report, the annual report, and the financial statement for 2015-16. Minister, when we visited, like the Honorable Member was saying, Smith, we were discussing the thing to say SA Express is better than SAD. By far. And we had hoped that it will go from to better and better and better. I like to know, CEO, you just explain to us what is going on in SA Express, and is there still a hope that you will come out of this mess? Because we don't know how long this merger will take. But in the meantime, we don't know if there are plans. We know about the turnaround strategy, but for 4 years now, you are making losses in your business. We understand the dynamics, we know everything. Is it, and I don't want to think that there is a management problem, but for me sitting here, I can easily say that maybe you became very relaxed because you think the merger will take place, so we don't need to do, you know, that extra things to improve. I just want to understand, because referring to all these things, and the other thing is, Minister, CEO, that day that the Honorable Member was referring to, they was telling me that the two members, the three members, they can give them, book them a hotel. Mm. But me, nah, I cannot book a hotel for me. Because of the agencies book on two numbers. The ticket, the number differs from each other. And there's a policy saying if the ticket number is different, therefore they cannot book me. But it was not my problem that I missed the flight. What if I couldn't afford to pay if it was a person who doesn't have money or anything? And that was the argument, and I was just saying, because now I'm the chairperson, the Pony was telling me, yes, you are the chairperson, see what are you people doing. I
want to play now, you know, the night guy. You say, no, it's fine. I will sort myself out. I will see what. But inside, I was very close. Because you can just imagine sitting there without nothing, without having food to eat. You're so hungry, you are nothing, you must get your own way. We cannot accommodate you in what way. So thank you very much. Can you just explain to us, if it is going to take another year, Honorable Minister, what is going to happen? Is the money that they got from Fairfield, the guarantee, going to assist you and help carry you through? What? Thank you.
Chairperson, can I be the first one to start?
Yeah.
I shook my head, Honourable Member, because this is actually the first time in my period that SA Express has defaulted. I have a meeting immediately after this with the AG to deal with this matter. And it's not only, and I think we must separate out a couple of things. I understand exactly where members are coming from. I've been stuck in the Eastern Cape after an operation Pakisa, and nobody comes to tell you. So I phoned the chair, I phoned the CE, and I said, at least tell people what they're doing. I get many calls. So the service is absolutely beautiful. And it, for me, I have asked the chair a year ago of the board that in their performance agreements must be service. A service delivery or service towards the public at airport. Because even if it's airport's company's responsibility, SA Express, SA Airways, they have responsibility. I mean, we fly other airlines as well, where there's not an SA Express or an SAA, we must all fly our mother carrier. But we fly other airlines, and it's never like that. And I mean, before we make a decision that the airlines are lax because they know they are guaranteed by government, before we make that decision, they must. I agree. They must pull up. I mean, it's been a big fight for a very long time with SA Express, and in my past life with SAA. Just the fact that they don't tell people what's happening. I waited. I didn't phone them the minute I saw the aircraft moving off the without me. I didn't phone him. I waited for him to phone to say, or for somebody to say that this aircraft will be late. I mean, nobody said anything. So it's an enormous problem, and I mean, the purses on the aircraft, I mean, I don't want to generalize, because it's not always the case. But there are very good experiences and very good workers, but there are also people who are not very pleasant on the plane. And it is our network into the country. People use our airlines to come to South Africa and to leave South Africa. And that is the first and the last experience they have of our country. And so it's a very important carrier within the country. But I want to separate out a few of the things. There's the issue of the service. The service doesn't make the company be in a crisis, the service that they present. I tell you experience, we flew a couple of weeks ago from one, in another country, from one airport to another, and because it's a small aircraft, same feeling. I just felt I wasn't going to get to the other side. I sent my family a message, remember I love you, whatever happens. And I mean, but that is, so I think, I almost want to separate right out how we feel about SA Express and SAA and what is the kind of action stuff that they have to do. So Honourable Member Sifako asked me a question about whether we have issues, whether we have actual stats that show that the merger will be a success. We do, actually. In fact, a company has been appointed to deal with the merger. And for Honourable Member Labuskagne, look, I don't think it's going to happen within, I mean, I've got a timeline here, but I think it's going to take at least 3 years. Because we've got to look at the different models. So these companies must remain floating. They must be going concerns. And we will sort out today SA Express's path to going concern. Because, and it's not just today because we're in this meeting, but because it's been part of the plan to get, and it's something like 121 million or something that needs to be brought back into the company. But they can talk about the details, the CFOs here and the CE. So the merger is going to take, I think, about 3 years. Look, the idea about the merger is that we own, as a country, and the country owns, or we own 2.9% in 2.5%, 2.95, almost 3% in SA Airlink. We own Mango, and Mango is the commercial part of SAA. And then we own SA Express. And SA Express is supposed to do regional and domestic flights. Mango, the same. And SAA, the same, as well as international flights. And SA Airlink, they fly both low cost plus regional and so forth. So the idea is to use what we have to be able to put together either a holding company or merge the whole company. At the moment, the code to operate an aircraft, you use what's called code. Now, all four of these airlines or aircraft, all four of these airlines actually exist from one code, and that is the SAA code. So SAA Express is not in a commercial agreement at the moment, unless they've done it while I haven't been looking. But they're not in a commercial agreement, Honourable Member Julius, at the moment. But they do have a code sharing relationship with SAA, because they can only fly using SAA's code. And I mean, and this thing has been used, I think, and I've been sort of told by them over a period, it's been used almost at will. So if SAA thinks it's a good idea for Mango to fly there, then they give it to Mango. If SAA Express, if they think SAA Express should fly there, then they give it to SAA Express. If they think SAA Express shouldn't fly there, but SAA Airlink should fly there, and they give it to SAA Airlink. And now we're formalizing that relationship. So it's either a holding company, or it's a merged company, or it is a merged company plus a sale of, say, 25% in terms of the SAA legislation. That is the kind of ideas. Remember, we've already started with one area that's always bothered me very much when I came here. SAA has a technical section. SAA Express has a technical section. Danal has an innovative, world-class technical. I mean, you must have been at Danal's. I mean, they have all of that technical space sitting in different places. And so the first part of this agreement is actually, we've actually signed an agreement, as the CE said in his presentation, between the three companies. But in terms of SAA and National Treasury, within the company sits Mango, it's airships, the people who make our food, and the travel center, and of course South African Airways Technical is also separate, and then the 2.9% in Airlink. So all of that will come into the company. So on the one hand, that is what the merger is. The problem at the moment, and the honourable member here was saying earlier, that we're in a crisis. The crisis is, and I think it is a crisis. The crisis is that we are not a going concern, and that's the crisis. And it's the first time that SA Express, in the last, I think the last time was in 2010, 2011. Where they defaulted on their annual reports. It's the first time they've defaulted on their annual reports. It's not good enough. I mean, it's not acceptable. But we will deal with that now, because when there's a problem with the annual reports, it doesn't go to them, it comes to me, because I'm supposed to oversee the annual reports being there. A company has been, a Bain and Company has been appointed to manage the merger, so it's not us managing the merger, but the officials form part of the committee that reviews that process. So, they consult with the executive authorities, and we give them a mandate going forward. But I don't think it's an overnight issue. And also remember, almost all of, I mean, this 2020, I found it when I came. That was their turnaround strategy. And when people say they want another turnaround strategy, just work on your own turnaround strategy and finish that one. So there's no other turnaround strategy, it's just the one turnaround strategy, and then the process leading to the merger. But there are a whole range of technical issues and operational issues that the members have asked. And I'm going to hand it over to the CEO and to the CFO, that they talk to the issues around their annual financial statements, the issues of the services and service delivery at the airport, and the frustration that members talk about, because they're not really party to the merger discussion. So they won't talk about that, but Matsi and Edwin and others can also talk about it later. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister, and thank you, Chair. Yes, I summarized, I guess, the topics to the question of the merger, the question of the annual report, and of course the biggest one is the service delivery in the form of delays, accommodation, baggage, and communications. In truth, I believe the Minister has covered the issue of the merger. The CFO is going to give an update in terms of the annual report and why the delay or why the failure to table the annual report. And I think from my side, I'm going to just first openly apologize for the delays. It's something that really we hate, all of us as well, in the organization. As I've said, one of the biggest challenges we've had is the status, the aging of our aircraft. Now, I think I'd like to assure even Mr. Singh that the aircraft, when they actually fly, they are safe. They have been, you know, as I said, we've got very competent pilots who would not fly
an aircraft, even if a switch, you know, beyond what is acceptable, they would not actually wouldn't allow them, and that's their training. So the aircraft was probably, it left and it landed in Cape Town without any incidents. Otherwise they would tell us. So we are, I think Honorable Cornet did mention the issue of, you know, what is our plan. Our plan is to, yes, as I said, we are also with the customers. We do not want delays. We would like all flights to leave on time. And the bulk of our business, if we can get to that level, most of the other problems actually disappear as well. And we've tested that. The moment we have a perfect schedule for the day, flights leaving on time, there's a lot of things that come out positive. The moment there's delays, it actually impacts on other things. It even impacts on costs and availability of crew, which just further exacerbates the situation. So what have we done? We are in the final, and I'll talk a little bit about it. We have identified that, especially our aircraft type called the CRJ-200, we are in the process of really exiting those aircraft so that we can bring in new aircraft. Now, currently, we are busy talking to certain leasing companies, and to a point where they are willing to give us aircraft without government guarantees, which is a good thing. But we're still in the process of that, and it's about to go for approval to the ministry in terms of PFMA. And that's going to reduce this unavailability of aircraft. So what happens is that we plan an engine, an aircraft, and let's say we have to fix, because there's regular legislated repair cycles for aircraft. What would happen is that the aircraft would have a planned schedule which says we'll fix this aircraft in 21 days. It goes in, and then when we open it, there's more work that needs to be done. And then, of course, when you call for parts, because that aircraft type is no longer being made, it takes longer to get spares. I mean, sometimes it takes up to 6 months. So an aircraft that was meant to be out for a short period of time ends up staying longer than it's supposed to be. And that leads to schedule interruption. So we are processing that, and we should start seeing new aircraft coming in, maybe hopefully by February, depending on the approvals. In terms of accommodation, Honorable Prince is correct. They actually, she knows the rules. I was wondering. Yes, we do accommodate people when we have delayed them. We accommodate them, drive them, we make sure that they get to their destinations. We are very careful when it comes to children. We do a lot of things around children. I mean, we wouldn't leave a child stranded at the airport. It wouldn't be right, even if it means exiting our rules to satisfy the child. Connecting passengers, yes, the rule currently, and it's an IATA rule, is that if you book the tickets together so that we know, I mean, we've paid people up to 100,000 rand if they were connecting, let's say, from Bloemfontein to London, and the Bloemfontein leg is delayed, and we knew that they were on a London flight. So the ones that there's two things. Okay, the biggest one is if the tickets are booked separately, we consider that we're responsible for you from point A to point B, not to point C, because we didn't know about it. But it's something that we look at, and we sometimes take it case by case and handle it. If you had the spoken, they would have resolved it. No, they shouldn't be. When it comes to that, Honorable Chair, I think I've taken note of the comment around just the attitude. We've always praised ourselves for having very good people when it comes to handling people, but maybe due to the stress and the rate at which we've had delays, maybe it's something that we need to revisit and address, which would mean call for senior management to actually get heavily involved and handle it. So we'll take that and make sure that we address it. I'm going to just answer the other questions now. So I've covered delays in the sense that there's 2 points there. Really apologize. We've got a strategy, and we have a daily meeting now that's called morning prayers that takes place to make sure that we know exactly where our aircraft are. And we've got a clickertel. Clickertel is almost like a mass messaging system in the company that talks internally. We are still, yes, and there is an issue. We are still working on something else called where we can call customers if we have delays ahead of time. We can call them to also gain some customer service surprises or delight moments, as we call them. We are working on a system. We've always said we are pledging, we are requesting our customers to really put their number. What happens is that sometimes when we call, we end up calling the travel agents, because the travel agents, instead of putting the customer's number, they put their own number. And so we're not able to get to them. And sometimes they put landline numbers, which also, again, complicates the situation, because some of these we want to send a text to all our customers. But we're working with our communications department to make sure that that is communicated. I think one of the biggest challenges we have is communications. The customer service actually is communications, and I accept that, you know, we should be calling, telling you exactly, updating you as the customers when we have delays. I think some customers have said, you know, it's better to tell us than to keep quiet, and that's something that we're working on as a team. Is there hope that SA Express will come out of these challenges? The answer is yes. I think it's a definite yes. We've worked, we continue to work hard. One of the biggest challenges that we've had has been the funding, and that actually leads to a few complications, but there's a lot of good things that the business is doing, and there's a lot of targets that the business is meeting. So I strongly believe that, you know, this is not, it's not doom and gloom, but we need to fix the challenges that are facing us. Missing luggage, I have not, we look at that, we monitor it. We've probably got the lowest statistics when it comes to missing luggage, but any lost bag is too many bags. So it's something that we monitor. We behave, we perform way below the statistics of missing bags. But again, as I say, passenger, you know, we have to treat them as individuals and not as statistics. Explaining what is a honeymoon period. Honeymoon period is like any, that's called honeymoon period in anything. Honeymoon period is when you've just bought a new car. You're not expecting it to give you problems in the first year. So even in aeroplanes, we have that period. The first 5 years, probably you would not have any challenges, any maintenance problems. As we say, we've got two types of aircraft now. We've got the CLG, the jets, and then we've got the turboprops. The turboprops are fairly young, and we don't experience problems with the turboprops. We experience problems with the old jets. Unfortunately, sometimes we have to take the turboprop to assist the turboprop. I mean, if you look, for example, in Cape Town, we never had turboprops, but we've brought them down now to assist the jets to improve the schedule, or the on-time performance. Honorable Nita spoke about shaking of the flight. It's summer now, maybe just if I can explain it like that. It's summer now, so there's many heat pockets in the sky that are very hot. So if an aircraft is flying, it's flying low, especially in the coastals, it goes through the heat pockets. You'll note, I mean, but the pilots are trained, well trained to handle them. It's not anything to be worried about. I didn't understand the question about the correctional plan, so the pledge. Oh, I did. Okay, perfect. Then there was something about the standard time for the flight. I'm not sure which one.
Yeah.
Or the renewal.
Yeah.
No, it's as I say. I mean, we've got 18-year-old aircraft, the CRJ-200s. Now, an aircraft can live until it's 50. There's nothing wrong with an aircraft. The problem is that as it gets older, it becomes more expensive to maintain, and it takes longer to maintain. So don't worry. When you're flying, just those aircraft are safe, but they cost us more than normal. It's more like there's more things now that you have to repair than when you started. Some are 18, some are 10, some are 6, are 4 years old. So the ones that are 4 years old, they're fine. In terms of, if you plan to maintain it in 21 days, you finish it in 21 days. As they get older, you plan to maintain it in 21 days. When you open it, there's more, like let's say there's rust. Now, rust in our case is not, you just wipe it away and it goes. It's a whole process. So you are planning to fix the aircraft in 21 days. You have to now remove the panels. You have to remove a few parts. You have to send them overseas. They have to be cleaned or you have to get new panels. So, and that ends up elongating the process and costing us more money. So we will not fly an unsafe aircraft. Maybe that's the message. It's just that it costs us more. As I said earlier...
Chairperson, can I just make a proposal? I'm terribly sorry for the interruption. I'm looking at our time. We have a plenary at 2. We still need to run to our offices and so forth. Can I suggest that if all the outstanding questions can be in written form, if it's not a problem?
No, thank you very much. I think
if it's all right with us.
Yes, I think I was going to say that when it comes to your request, Mr. Honorable Julius, around asking for more information. We've got all this information. We thought we were coming. I mean, remember, we were only called about 5-6 days ago. So. But we've got all the information. We can give you as much information as you want. I think I've covered everything. I'll give to Mark just to talk a little bit about.
That was short, very short. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the details you must provide because we still need to, some of us need to compare ourselves.
So I'll keep it short, but I'll provide further information.
Yes. Please.
Okay. Essentially, where we are with the annual report is that. All the issues that needed resolution are resolved bar one thing, and that's the assessment that the auditors are willing to sign off that we meet the going concern test. Now the going concern test is two things, liquidity, do you have sufficient cash to carry you for the next 12 months, and solvency. At this point we meet the solvency test. The liquidity test we meet but with very tight margins. So in the event of there being a 5% move on revenue, for example, downwards, we might not meet the liquidity. So that's the issue right now. And it can be resolved by just sorting out some technical issues on some of a portion of the guarantee that was allocated to us and awarded to us, issued to us in 2015. And we just need to resolve that, which then sorts out the funding issue, which gives sufficient room for any buffers on cash for the next 12 months. So that's really where we are. I can provide far more comprehensive feedback in terms of what the process has been, where we are, and what the reason. So the short story is we can't table the annual report on a going concern basis until the auditors have signed off that they're satisfied that the basis of preparation is correct.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry to rush, but to have two departments in one
but the urgency of this problem, we have to call you there. But thank you very much for your time, and good luck for your work. And I hope that it will become better. I hope so. And we are not going to sit with any delay anymore. I'm not saying we won't sit, because like you're saying, the pilot won't go up. But at least if there can be communication, before, tell us or whatever. But now we're sitting there, no one is saying. Like Monday when I come on my way to George, they were saying they announced delay of 3 hours. So one lady went. Then they were saying you must book. They look for that lady. She's gone. Because it was saying 3 hours. So this meeting is adjourned. But thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Is this the one that's